Welcome to Ugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Sam Grass with Lee Cantor in Atlanta, Georgia. How are you, Lee?
I am doing great.
And also joining us today is Brad Culp, not in Atlanta, but in Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you all this morning?
We're doing well. How are things in Dallas?
Well, it's hot here, but that's no surprise. It's been hot here since I got here.
Now, how are you guys handling the World Cup loss?
Well, you know, we did talk about that last week, didn't we? I guess we lost to Ghana for a second time, but, we're used to it.
Well, one way or another, I think we portrayed ourselves well and have something to be rather proud of.
Yeah, well, it is exciting. It's exciting to watch the U.S. It's exciting to watch the other teams play as well. So, this week we're going to turn our attention for trivia to current events. Again, we've got this is our Independence Day, 4th of July show. We got the holiday weekend coming up, so we're going to do a little bit of flag trivia, and you guys are going to participate.
You got that? That means you're okay. Participating, Sam.
Not me.
So, this is a little trivia quiz for you. The first question is, is it ever appropriate to fly the U.S. flag upside down, and if so, why?
Only in a moment of distress as a distress signal.
Did you cheat?
Yeah.
I'm a Boy Scout.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Man.
Okay. Here's the second question. Can you ever fly the flag at night, and if so, under what conditions?
Yes, but it must be properly lit.
Man.
Wow, you're good.
That's amazing. You're like a savant remembering this from, what, like 40 years ago?
You know, it brings me no income whatsoever, but I got to know it.
So who's the trivia master now?
I could see.
Okay, so... two more questions. The first one is, was there a designation for the colors on the flag, and if so, what was it?
Come on, Lee, answer it.
You're the Boy Scout.
I don't know that one.
Actually, that's a trick question because there were no real designations for the colors initially, but then when the Great Seal was designed, they added meaning to the colors. And white is for purity and innocence. Red is for valor. Blue is for vigilance, perseverance, and justice. So one other small bit of trivia. Independence Day was first observed on July 8th, 1776, not July 4th, even though July 4th was the day that the Declaration of Independence was adopted. And then 1941... it was when July 4th became recognized as a national holiday, which is interesting. You would have thought it would have happened before that. But really only about 70 years ago, 69 years ago. So with that, let's turn to our guests this morning. I want to welcome Patty Elrod Hill of the Elrod Hill Law Firm. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
And Faye Van Treese of Northwest Mutual Life. Good morning, Faye.
Good morning.
And our first guest that we're going to talk to today here in Dallas is Don Stockard. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Brad.
Don is a volunteer for Texas Veterans, and he has had a career that he's retired from and now spends a good bit of his time giving back to the veterans that have served our country, and we're going to chat with him a little bit about that. Don, if you could just start out by giving us a little bit of background on yourself and what you originally did, and then how you kind of came to be a volunteer for the veterans.
Okay, Brad, thank you very much for inviting me here today. My wife and I, Virginia, live in Plano, Texas. We've been at our residence now approximately 20 years. I've been in the Metroplex for the last 25 years. I grew up in Oklahoma, got my education there, went to a small teacher's college in northeastern Oklahoma and got a bachelor's degree in emphasis in education, went on to get my master's degree down in Louisiana, again associated with the educational field. I did teach a couple years, coached a little bit, realized that that wasn't what I really wanted to do for the rest of my life, so I started to look into other career opportunities, and I sought the area of sales. In 1986, I actually fell into a situation that really became my cup of tea. I ran onto a company that was marketing long-term care insurance back in 1986, one of the first people in the Dallas Metroplex that was marketing that product. I did that for almost 20 years and still doing it some on a temporary basis. Because I am pretty much retired from that. But I was very lucky to get into that. And I think one of our guests is tied in and does long-term care. But if the audience is not aware of that, long-term care to me is a very, very important insurance product because it's the cost of nursing home and home health care and assisted living is so expensive today that you really need to consider purchasing a policy that will help defray some of those costs. So I'm a real advocate of long-term care insurance. I veered off of that a little bit. I've done some life insurance. I've done some annuities. And so just pretty much generally in the insurance industry all around. Approximately 2 or 3 years ago, Brad, I started to look at the retirement. When I turned 65, I wanted to still be active to some degree. So I was looking around, and the area that really got my attention was the veterans. I have a tremendous amount of respect for all of the veterans. To me, the veterans are the real heroes of today. The guys that fought in World War II, and Korean War, and the Vietnam War, and of course the Gulf War, and God bless those folks that are fighting today for our freedom. But I wanted to help them. I realized, and I just kind of fell into this. I realized that there was a program there that was available to the veterans, widows of veterans, who could get some additional funds to help pay for their in-home care, for their assisted living, for their memory care units, and for nursing home care. That benefit, I found out, was called the improved pension benefit, and it falls under the heading of aid in attendance. And so that benefits there for their taking, and it's just a matter of knowing someone to help them put that together.
Excellent. So you said, as you started to search around, that you had a real passion for veterans. Was there something driving that? Was there an experience that was driving that, or is it something that just over the course of time,
nothing in particular. Some of my family members were in the military, but I just realized, and I'm very thankful that we have the freedom we have, and I know that freedom could not come about without those men and women fighting in World War I, World War II, and those wars. And to me, those guys and gals are the real heroes, not the movie stars or the professional football players or baseball players. They fought, and many of them gave up their lives to give us the freedom we have here today and for us to be able to have this show. It's only because of them that we're able to do this.
That's absolutely right. And I know, unfortunately, we're not live with video, but I know you've got a presentation that you give that's quite moving, And I don't know if I can put you on the spot or not to share a little bit about what's in that or some of the things that you talk about in there. Is that?
Well, I actually am invited around the community of the Metroplex to provide this information to assisted living and nursing home properties all over the Metroplex. And what I try to do is give them some basic information about what is available to the veterans. The aid in attendance program is actually available to all veterans who served during wartime. That's the first part of the ingredients of getting approved. Were you in the service at least 90 days? And were you in during wartime? Did you have an honorable discharge? That was very, very important as well. And for the veterans that we apply for, they must show us their DD-214, showing that they have an honorable discharge. The other part of this program is based upon how much medical expenses are you paying out of pocket? Are you deficient in some of the ADLs so that we can see that you need some additional help or money to pay for that? And, of course, the other thing is that you must be over age 65. Well, all of the World War II and Korean veterans are over age 65, and now we're beginning to see some of those veterans that are turning 65 that were in the Vietnam War, and we're beginning to help them. But that's the military qualifications. Now, what's available to the veterans if they are able to get this benefit? Well, for the married vets, they can receive up to $1,950 a month in benefits. For the single vet, it's $1,645 per month. And for the widow, it's $1,056.
Now, if there is a couple, do they both have to require ADL assistance in order to get the joint benefit?
They do not. As a matter of fact, if the veteran is the one that's deficient, then we can apply for him, and he's eligible for a benefit. But on the other hand, if the spouse is deficient, then we can apply on his behalf and get the benefit for her.
So the entire amount?
Well, it's a lesser amount. Sure is. You bet.
Okay.
For the spouse that's receiving the benefit. But this is what's available, and for the most part, they're able to get to this benefit.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I remember from your presentation is that there is a ton of money that is used that's not, or that's available that's not used every year. Can you talk about that?
Well, that's true. And the sad part about this is this benefit's been around since the 1950s, and it seems like that very few veterans are aware of this benefit. Every year, there's approximately $22 billion set aside for this pension plan. That's with a B, billion.
Each year.
And only about 1.5% of that money is used, Brad. It's a shame that that more veterans do not know about this.
So at the end of the year, if $22 billion is set aside only few hundred million is used, what does that money just go back into the kitty for the next year? Or?
Well, I really don't know the answer to that, but I assume that it goes back in there and it's just not being used. That's the sad part about it.
That's a shame. So one other thing, you exist, your service exists, and you're a volunteer, there's a couple of questions here that all kind of came into my mind at once. Number one, my understanding is that technically no one's allowed to charge for this service. But, let me let you comment on that.
Well, the fact is that anyone that helps a veteran, and that would be anywhere in the United States, not just Texas, this is a nationwide benefit, but you're legally not able to charge the veteran for doing the paperwork to help them with that. Now, with that being said, if there are legal things that need to be done, there's a lot of times power of attorneys, medical power of attorneys, paperwork that needs to be properly done, a lot of trust need sure. to be considered as well. And that needs to be done by an attorney. I do work with a number of attorneys in the Metroplex. I try to find one that's VA certified that mm-hmm. has been to the VA classes as I have. And so by using those, I can put those veterans and widows of veterans in front of a VA attorney that will give them good advice, and that's what they need.
Excellent. And now, I also seem to remember, and you can maybe confirm this, and maybe Patty can comment on it as well, but I think that I heard that there's no look-back period on the transfer of assets with the VA, which is a significant difference from applying for Medicaid.
That exactly. Medicaid has their set of rules. The VA has their set of rules. There is no look back for transferring of assets or repositioning assets. For Medicaid, there is a 5-year look back, but the veterans actually can reposition assets today and apply immediately.
So, and that would be another area where they probably want to consult an attorney.
Exactly, and that's why you need to have somebody professionally that is familiar with those facts that we can turn them on to and let the attorney handle that legal part of it.
Excellent. Now, the other thing that kind of I wanted to ask you about is, and we're taking a step back a little bit here, but part of the reason that you exist and other people like you exist is because it's not exactly a trivial process to apply.
It's not. The process is pretty much overwhelming. I just came from a family member this morning that was trying to fill out the paperwork for her mother that resides in McKinney, Texas, in an assisted living. And she said that if I hadn't have come along and helped her, she probably would have thrown it in the trash because it's so overwhelming. And the paperwork has to be done correctly because if it's not, then it's thrown to the side, and it takes forever to get approved. Even when everything is done correctly, we're looking at a four to a six month mm-hmm. process before we even know whether they're approved. Now, the good part about that, Brad, is that it does go back retroactively to the month that it was applied for. So the first check would be $6,000 to $8,000, and then after that, it just becomes mm-hmm. a monthly stream of income,
right.
just like their Social Security deposited into their checking account.
Excellent. So, unlike many of our guests, most of our guests, I think, are kind of part of the senior services business. You're a part of the business, but you're a volunteer, so obviously this is near and dear to your heart. I imagine as a volunteer that it's quite gratifying for you to be able to help families, and our listeners love to hear stories. Is there any particular incident that where you were able to help a family that you could share with us?
Well, not one in particular. My satisfaction is getting that little short note saying thank you. We just received notification from the VA that we've been approved and our check is going to be deposited for several thousand dollars. And actually, I've had some phone calls where family members have broken down and cried because there's such a stress factor here, trying to stretch those dollars
right.
to help pay for their loved ones, and so, you know, the emotion of that is just pretty overwhelming. And when I receive that, that's probably the most gratifying thing that I receive from this, and that's why I do it.
Yeah,
is for that reason alone. Is I know that a vast majority the paperwork that I sent in for the veterans is going to be approved, and that family is going to get some additional funds to pay for their care.
That's terrific. I know in our business as well, I have, and I'm sure you have this opportunity too, to talk to some of these World War II vets and Korean War vets and hear some of their stories, and it's just it's phenomenal. To hear the stories and to be able to talk to them and thank them for
exactly
their service.
and it's always it's all in our presentations and material that I put out. I always recognize those veterans in the crowd and always thank them for their service and thank the family members and always keep in mind the men and women who are fighting for our country today. Keep them in our prayers, and just pray that they get back to their families.
Absolutely. Well, Don, one last thing before I get some contact information from you. For our listeners that might have loved ones that could be eligible for this veterans assistance, what piece of advice would you have for them?
Well, the most important thing is that they get as much information as possible. You can go online and pull up a lot of information, but you can just scout around and ask around at a lot of the assisted living nursing homes. They know the people that are in this for the right reason, and I think that I'm in that position that I'm there to help them, and they just need to just get as much information as possible. It's like you would in anything that you would be making a decision that affects your family.
And I imagine, based on what we've said previously, that you would also advise that they don't go it alone.
I certainly don't advise that. The paperwork is pretty overwhelming. The 21-526 and the 21-534 are fairly overwhelming documents that for the most part, is just far beyond what some people can really can do for themselves. So I recommend you find someone like myself that will sit down with the family and get them through that process, make sure that it's all done, all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted, and then we can send it into Waco to where that's where the process starts. But the final decision in our area here in the Dallas Metroplex area, the final decision is made up in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Really?
So that's where it's going to ultimately come from.
Interesting. Okay, well, Don, thank you. Tell us, tell our listeners how they can contact you if they'd like to.
Well, I have a toll-free number. That toll-free number is 800-500-9168, extension 210. And I have a local Dallas number. That number is 972-267-6735. Or if they would like to get on a computer and email me, you can email me at my email address, and that address is d_stockard, S-T-O-C-K-A-R-D, at sbcglobal.net.
Well, Don, thank you very much. Great information. I really appreciate you being here this morning with us. And I'm going to turn it back to Sam at this point, and we're going to talk to some of our Atlanta guests.
Thank you, Brad. I certainly appreciate, Don, your information and what you do. It's a great having you on the show.
Thank you.
With that, I have to explain to our listeners that Brad and I didn't do this on purpose. I guess we were just lucky. But here it is, the 4th of July, and we have not one, but two individuals that have experience and expertise in the area of veteran benefits. The one here in Atlanta is Patricia Elrod Hill. Patricia is the principal and founder of the Elrod Hill Law Firm. In regards to veterans, she also was a staff attorney for the Office of Regional Counsel, the Department of Veterans Affairs here in Atlanta, for 12 years. So first I'd like to welcome you, Patricia. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
And then there are two areas of expertise that you bring to our show, one being this on the veterans, which I do want you to briefly speak to. And then the second area is Patricia also specializes in elder law. So I'd like the second half of our conversation to cue on that. So why don't you begin by telling us a little of your background, and then I know you started off with the Veterans Administration, so tell us how you started there, and just begin at that point.
Okay. As he said, my name is Patty Elrod Hill, and I actually grew up in South Dakota, and most people will say I've never met anyone from South Dakota. So I graduated from South Dakota State University with a degree in English and planned to to be a teacher. But I married a Navy guy, and he was training to be a pilot, so we...
We're good here. What can I say?
So we traveled all over the United States and ended up for 3 years in Hawaii. And while I was in Hawaii, I actually taught Marines the GED. So have a lot of experience with veterans. And then during that time period, I started going back to school and took a business law course, and I discovered that I really enjoyed reading the law, and I enjoyed discussing the law. And from there, I decided that it was probably a good idea for me to go to law school. So when my husband finally got out of the Navy, I did go to law school. We happened to be living in St. Louis, Missouri, and I was admitted to Washington University School of Law there in St. Louis. And I graduated from there, and the day after we graduated, or I graduated, we moved to Atlanta, and I've been here for 21 years now. So been practicing law 21 years.
And when you came to Atlanta, is that when you initially started with the Veteran Administration?
Well, as soon as I passed the bar exam, okay. which took an entire summer, I started applying for jobs. And what I found, because I already had a child at that time, was that the government offered great opportunities yeah. for a little more flexibility than the large law firms. And so I was fortunate to get an interview with the Department of Veterans Affairs and got the job, started part-time, and moved into full-time. And while I was there as a staff attorney, I represented four hospitals in the state of Georgia, as well as the regional office. We did mostly tort claims, which would be medical malpractice, but I did employment law, and I taught advanced directives to physicians so they would understand what those documents they were reading were. So.
Good. And I know that Don was talking about, as a veteran, the qualifying events to receive this benefit. He stated that you needed to be active in a time of conflict, I believe is the terminology. Can you define that? What does that mean?
Well, it's actually defined by statute, and the requirements are up until at least the end of the Vietnam War, 90 days on active duty, one day during a wartime, which is declared. And in order to determine whether or not there's a declared war, you really have to go to the statute and look at the dates. Because they differ than most of us would think. For instance, in the Vietnam War, some people were actually, the war was declared actually before for veterans who were in country than for those who were not in country. In other words, they can qualify for the benefit if they served in country versus those who did not serve okay. at that time. But that one day in wartime does not require any service outside of the United States. In fact, my first client that I worked with was on active duty for exactly 90 days and served the entire time here in Atlanta.
So if I understood, mm-hmm. does the it vary a little between the wartime issues? I mean, depending on how it's defined and when it's declared?
That's correct.
Okay.
And in order to make sure that the person qualifies, we do need to look at the code section detailing wartime, and also figure out exactly what service that person served in.
Okay.
So does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. Well, no, anything with the government is always a little fuzzy, but I think I've got my general hands around that.
It means you need to hire someone.
I need to hire. Since I wasn't in the service, yeah. I don't have to worry about that. I very much appreciate it. Is there anything else in regards to the VA that this benefit that you'd like to add to mm-hmm. this conversation?
Well, I think Mr. Strickland covered it very well, and I appreciate that he's a volunteer, and that's great because we're always looking for people to assist in filling out the application. I mean, it is unfortunate that it is so difficult to fill out an application. So I would recommend that most people find someone to help them with this process. But in terms of the benefit, I think Mr. Strickland was accurate in saying that the benefit is available to veterans who are deficient in some of the activities of daily living. And that's important because the veteran does have to have some deficiency in order to get qualified for this benefit.
And is there an age qualifier on that? Did I hear him say age 65?
Well, age 65, believe it or not, the VA considers someone 65 or older to be disabled. So they've met that criteria if they are 65 or older. But if there is a veteran who is younger than that but happens to have some form of disability, he or she can qualify for this benefit as well.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to move over to another area of your expertise, that's elder law. Mm-hmm. Why don't you begin by just simply describing what that is and how did you get into it, and we'll begin at that point.
Well, elder law is an area of the law that really encompasses many different areas, I guess, many different specialties. It's basically defined by the client that we serve. The reason that it's called elder law is that initially most attorneys that practiced in this area found that their clients needed some guidance in preparing for incapacity. So that's a big part of elder law is preparing for incapacity and long-term care. We do also deal with clients who have other disabilities, younger clients who have disabilities, but elder law encompasses generally a population that is facing some sort of disability, whether it's an incapacity or physical disability.
Facing incapacity sounds, in my mind, that's a negative connotation. Tell us again or explain to us what that may encompass.
Well, generally, a client will come to me, frankly, the children usually of an elder who may be at that time facing an incapacitating, and I keep saying that, but Alzheimer's, dementia, some other form of incapacity. And, you know, frankly, we are all facing incapacity, but generally speaking, when someone comes to see me, it is because they may have gotten a diagnosis of a dementia or an Alzheimer's, and that is a lot of times what the first step their children are bringing them to me.
So now the child comes to you, mm-hmm. telling you that, hey, my mom has been diagnosed, so the senior isn't coming to you?
Well, the senior will come with the children, but I would right. say that for the most part, it is the adult children who contact my office first because they are realizing that their parent is starting to face some form of
some challenge,
physical right. or mental incapacity.
Now, at that point, how do you kind of sort through the siblings? Because sometimes that's where, you know, the siblings might have different plans.
Well, that is difficult, and we do have to make sure that we do see and talk with the elder to determine who actually should be in charge. But generally, our office requires that all of the siblings
are on the same page.
Yes, that we sort through that issue because you're right. That is a big issue for a lot of our seniors is that their children are having disagreements about who's going to manage the affairs. So with that, I would say that the best thing is for someone to make that decision before they're actually
right.
faced with
early
the incapacity,
on, right.
make that decision early on. But we do have to sort through that, who is actually going to be the decision maker in the family.
And then tell us, what are some of the documents and issues and tools that you use to plan?
Well, the basic tools that we use to plan for incapacity, and these are tools that everyone should have really, are the advanced health care directives, whereby they nominate someone to make health care decisions for them if they're not able to make decisions. But we also, at a basic level, a power of attorney for finances, a durable power of attorney for finances, which is a document whereby they nominate someone to make their financial decisions for them. So those are very basic documents. A lot of times we're also dealing with trusts so that we can appoint a trustee to manage the affairs, to manage the financial affairs for the elder.
Now, doesn't it get tricky in that, you know, you're younger and you mm-hmm. theoretically, oh, yeah, living trust, pull the plug, I don't want to go through any of that. And then it gets down, it's time to actually put this stuff in play. And how do you manage that? Because, you know, at that point, that's a vague thing, right? It's not the crystal clear, like if X happens, then we, you know, end care.
So you're talking about with the advanced directive for
right.
healthcare, if someone is in the end stages of life, perhaps.
Right, and then you have a sibling that's like, no, I think that mom's hanging on, and let's let's do more stuff.
Well, the Advanced Directive for Healthcare actually requires, first of all, that two physicians agree that the person is in the stages whereby either they cannot make any decisions for themselves,
right,
or they can't communicate those decisions. And that's why you have an Advanced Directive, is that you nominate one person to make that decision. But it is actually beginning if two physicians determine that that person is in that stage, and then the family does have to make a decision. And you're right, it is a difficult decision, and that's why we have these advanced directives for healthcare, because it gives the elder, or gives anyone actually, the ability to spell out when they would, what they would, right, like to have happen if they become in that condition.
But how do you get involved in this?
Well,
while this is happening, you know, because it's a messy situation.
Well, I don't get involved as much now that I'm in private practice. When I mm-hmm. worked for the Department of Veterans Affairs, we actually did get involved, but mostly from the physician's viewpoint, where they would ask, you know, what do we do now?
Right.
You know, there's a controversy. But I have not actually had to get involved in this decision.
But you dropped the paperwork.
I dropped the paperwork.
That allows the process to take place.
And it's so important to have family along when you're drawing up that paperwork, actually, because what I like about the process, or what is important to me about this process, is that we often will have the children sitting there listening to their parent or husband and wife talking to each other about, what do you want to have happen at the end of life?
And this could be the first time they're having this conversation.
Most of the time,
in front of you, right?
Most of the time, it is the first time they're having this conversation.
Because now we got to sign off on it. It's not theoretical anymore.
And surprisingly, out of all the documents that I do, this one takes the longest to mm-hmm. discuss, because there is a lot of back and forth. Well, what if I'm in this condition?
Right.
What if I'm in that condition? But I always want my clients, and I tell them, I say, please talk to the person that you've nominated. Just don't spring it on, or don't have them, it's sprung on them at the last minute that they have to make this decision. Tell
right.
them what you would want. Even though we're putting it in a document, we want that conversation to occur.
Right.
So.
Patty?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Patty, this is Brad.
Hey, Brad.
What percentage of seniors do you think has an advanced directive in place? And, you know, I guess there's a broader question, too, which is, you know, what percentage of seniors have any sort of documentation in place, and what can be done to raise awareness so that more people do take advantage of that?
Well, I really can't give you a percentage. I think it's a pretty low percentage, although a lot of times when the seniors go into the hospital, they are encouraged to do at least the advanced directives. What I'm finding, though, is that they'll do them once, and then years and years and years will go by, and they will not have redone them as things change. I would encourage people to always – that this is a process. We're not just doing documents. We're actually discussing all of the issues. So, for instance, if somebody needs a financial power of attorney, we're discussing who's the most important person to do that, or who's the most logical person to do that, who will do the best job. It's a discussion. And at the end of that, there is a document that comes out of that, but the person has actually had to think through a lot of the issues and has had to vocalize maybe to a family member all of the issues and how they would want them resolved.
Patty, I think for the listening mm-hmm. audience, it's important. Once these documents are signed, is it etched in stone? Can at some future date, is there an avenue to change these documents if the client so wishes?
Almost every document can be changed. Advanced healthcare directives can be changed at any time, as long as the person has the mental capacity to do so. And it's a pretty low capacity, so generally speaking, they can change it at any time. The same with a will. The will can be changed at any time as long as the person has the capacity to do so. So, yes, these documents are not set in stone. And, in fact, sometimes we talk about that this is a temporary and that you'll come back later and change those. A lot of people want to have the child that lives in the same town with them as the power of attorney. And if that child leaves, then maybe we have to revisit that. So, but it can be changed at any time.
Obviously, Patty, with your education and background, you could have pursued any specialty within the realm of the law. Why did you move into this arena? There's got to be something that excites you.
Well, when I decided to leave the government, I thought about everything that I really enjoyed about the law. And the most important thing, the thing that I enjoyed the most, was the time that I spent with clients, and that I liked clients one-on-one. So I looked around and I realized that with the background that I did have, which is dealing with government red tape all the time, that I realized that seniors and people with disabilities were having to face these issues on a constant basis, and that I had a unique ability to guide them through that because I was on the other side of it. I also just really love the client stories. I could spend all day talking to my clients, especially, you know, my veterans, frankly, are some of the most interesting clients I have. So,
And if I can plug this and, mm-hmm. and do it properly, your practice is still very, very one-on-one basis.
My practice is very one-on-one. I meet with my clients all individually. And so right now I'm seeing all my clients. Obviously I have other employees, but I do all of the initial interviews with the clients, which I don't really want to change that because I enjoy that so much.
Yeah. For our listening audience, Patty, who might be either seeking veteran issues or have estate issues or long-term care, what piece of advice could you give these individuals?
I think the most important piece of advice that I would give these individuals is to have a family discussion. People put that off for so long, but that is the most important thing, and I'm always surprised at how many issues a family discussion will open up. So that's the first thing, do the family discussion.
That's great. We very much appreciate that. And for the listeners who might want to contact you in these regards, how can they do so?
Well, my telephone number here in Atlanta is 770-416-0776, and that is the best way to contact me. My paralegal, Sherry, will be happy to answer the phone. I also have a geriatric care manager who works with me part-time, and you can reach him through that as well. I also have a website, www.elrodhillfirm.com. That's ELROD-HILLFIRM.com. And those are probably the best ways to reach me.
And are veterans' concerns, is that something that's state by state, or is that like anybody could help somebody?
Well, the veterans' benefit is a federal benefit, but generally when we're doing preparation maybe to transition assets or reposition assets, that's a state by state issue, and so you do need to find an attorney
in your
state. Mm-hmm.
Well, we appreciate having you on the show. Great information. Thank you, Patty.
Thank you.
Our next guest is Faye Van Trees. Faye is a financial advisor with Northwestern Mutual in the Goodwin Wright office here in Buckhead. Good morning, Faye. How are you?
Good morning. How is everybody?
We're doing great. Again, I love to take credit, but here we have a great segue. Faye specializes or has an area of expertise in long-term care. So what I'd like to do, Faye, is for you to tell us a little bit of your background and then just start in as what is it that you do in your day and how do you get it done?
Perfect. Well, I'm a financial advisor, and I have a designation, which is CLTC, which is a Certified Long-Term Care Specialist. And basically, long-term care encompasses services provided to individuals suffering from a chronic illness, a disabling condition, or a cognitive impairment. Usually, these are over an extended period of time, and they may not cure or heal the patient, but will help with routine activities such as bathing, dressing, and eating, or other ADLs.
And I know that I understand what the options are and the intricacies of long-term care, but why don't you begin by telling our listening audience some of those issues?
Well, not a problem. Long-term care, you know, basically for options for long-term care, a lot of times people rely on their spouses or family members or friends. But in many cases, the spouse, you know, might be a similar age and they might be just as frail as the person receiving long-term care assistance. And with, you know, the way that people move around today, kids might not be local in the community and they might not be able to help. Or they might not have the know-how how to do that. And I know these guys have touched a little bit, but, you know, people think about Medicare, which is really a 65 and older catastrophic health insurance plan. These are for acute conditions, things that are going to get better, not chronic. You know, the next is Medicaid, which is a needs-based federal and state-funded program where you need to spend down your money until you've reached a certain threshold, which is very low. I would really, you know, encourage people to contact an elder care attorney to really discuss these things because it is so important. You know, the next thing is, you know, I hear from a lot of folks that, oh, I'll just, you know, I've got enough money, I'll pay it out of my assets. Well, the issue with this is that most people use their assets in retirement for paying for their retirement income needs. If you spend the principal, it has a direct effect on the income that it can generate, you know, for your living expenses. I would, you know, really say that you'd really need to set aside about $2 million in a separate account. Then if you needed a long-term care, with a 4% withdrawal rate, that would give you about $80,000 a year to help pay for your care. In many cases, it just makes sense to leverage your dollars and look at long-term care as an option. I mean, I've really had folks in the past that have had 24-hour care, and it's cost upwards of $120,000 a year out of pocket. So,
how did people deal with this before? I mean, this can't be new.
No, well, really, only I think, you know, in the past, really, it's been family members, but, you know, people stayed in the same town and it was multi-generational. And
so that just made it easier to manage for the family if everybody was there and then like a cousin could kind of help. And now people are more isolated. So now
exactly
they don't have the family to rely on. So now they're forced to get care from, you know, another business or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's several different issues coming into play here. First of all, just the longevity of
right.
The,
people are living longer.
Live
right.
Longer. I mean, and we all want that. I mean, who's going to sit here and say I only want to live to 65 and then go? So that's part of it. And that care when you are a senior, 65 plus, 75 plus, whatever that age might be, is exponentially more expensive than for a 45-year-old. So you got that issue. And then you have the issue of demographics, what you just spoke of. We don't have the close-knit family unit anymore. I mean, my family's in West Virginia, and I'm down here by myself. So that is a prime example. What do you do? And consequently, the children are not around. The relatives are not around to help. And quite frankly, with the pace of today's society and the pressures of today's society, either they don't want to or they can't help. It really is a multi-issue problem that we're facing here. Faye, why don't you tell us a little bit about where can this care be received, or where do you have to be to receive the care?
Oh, that's a great question. Basically, you can receive care in your home, which I find most people prefer that. You can either have an informal care, where somebody comes in and helps with cooking and cleaning and maybe driving you to the doctor's office. Then there's a higher level degree of care, which is skilled, which would be maybe a nurse or somebody else that has
some.
So
the first one's non-medical, and then the next level, then you're bringing in somebody with a medical background?
Exactly. And the you know, for an in-home care company, the prices can be significantly different in what the unskilled versus the skilled labor.
Sure.
But then, you know, besides at home, there are adult daycare centers, and that's really a respite for the primary caregiver. There's assisted living, which gives the person where they still have some independence, but they've got folks around all the time.
But that requires them to move to
Correct.
A new, they're now out of their house at that point.
Exactly. Nursing homes and hospice care, which is for end of life. You know, there are a lot of great options out there. But, you know, I find that, you know, people need to really think about and talk with their families about what's best for them in their specific condition.
You know, I want to spend the rest of our time on one important subject. And I know that you have prepared for us some numbers. And I think it's very important to try to convey the expense, the magnitude of that to our listeners. So I'm going to kind of throw you the ball. won't you go through your numbers and just kind of paint a picture for us?
Okay, not a problem. Well, there are, you know, definitely many ways to put a plan together that fits a variety of budgets. And I also like to say that long-term care insurance is not right for everyone. This is really a financial planning tool to protect your assets. In Atlanta, the average daily cost of care is about $170 a day. With this in mind, you know, you would really need, if you're looking at a policy, is deciding the level of maximum daily limit that policy can pay out. So meaning that if you had, you only needed somebody for 3 hours, it only might be $60, but the maximum that policy would be paying out would be, like, let's say that $170 or what have you. Next, what you need to look at is the elimination period. And this really is just how much time you have to come out of pocket before your insurance kicks in.
Yeah, coming from the acute setting, it's your deductible.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Finally, you need to look at the benefit period, such as like 3 years, 6 years, or unlimited. Ideally, you know, when I plan with folks, I really look at about $200 per day with an unlimited benefit period. And it's also very important to include inflation protection. And I can't say this enough. You know, it does make the policies more expensive, but it's very important. So if you had about $200 a day and you had a six-year benefit period, that would give you an account value of about $438,000 to spend on care. And, you know, with these types of policies, that care could be in the home, in the assisted living, nursing home, hospice, really a variety of different places. The average cost increase for health care in the U.S. is about 5.5% annually, so it's much higher than the 3% for the, you know, cost of living, the traditional stuff that you hear about. So having an inflation protection of at least 5% would be very important and ideal. Lastly, I want to just say that most companies will also give you discounts on your premiums for spouses, companions, whether it's domestic partners, or it could even be kind of a golden girl situation where you've got sisters that move back in to get, you know, with each other in their later years. And also through employers, long-term care multi-life discounts can really save you sometimes around 15%, sometimes more, sometimes a little less, but it can definitely give you a nice bang for your buck.
I think it's very important to go back to planning for this event. Most listeners that know my background, I come from the acute care setting, and our healthcare system is going to be changed, and I'm not here to debate for good or for bad. It's going to be changed, and the next financial crisis in my mind is long-term care.
I agree with you.
And you know, the number you threw here, 6 years of care at basically $500,000 in today's dollars. Most people don't think it's going to happen to them. Well, I'm in the business, ladies and gentlemen, and before the show began, the three of us were talking about the boom industry of what I'm in, and that's true. And everyone's rushing to it, and they're rushing to it because they know that the cost is there, and someone, somehow, some way is going to pay the price. So it's important to plan for this, and a lot of people will say, yeah, Sam, you're self-serving. Well, maybe I am, maybe I'm not, but the fact is, it's reality.
Oh, absolutely. And one last thing. When you're thinking about a long-term care, if you're looking at, you know, educating yourself on policies and that, the other thing to really look at is the financial strength of the company. You might not be using this insurance for 20 or 30 years. It's really important that company is still around to pay you out when you need it most. I would check one of the four credit or all of the four credit rating services like AM Best and really look at the top companies out there.
There's one more thing I want to touch on. Most people would be reluctant because they're saying, I'm not going to need this, or if I'm going to pay these premiums and I'm going to have invested $100,000 and then I die very suddenly and I have no need for the benefit and I've thrown my money away. That event is possible. But there are also ways to soften that or lessen or even eliminate that through very uniquely structured policies, second spousal type of situations and things of that nature. Speak briefly to that.
Well, I mean, they're just with a lot of different companies, there's a lot of different options out there. You know, some companies offer where the two spouses can share kind of one pot of money. Other ones have their own, you know, kind of pots of money. It really looks, you know, when it gets down to it, you really got to look at what your budget is and what your needs are. And, you know, I would encourage people to really talk with your family or friends and see if somebody's had a long-term care situation that they can share with you and the emotional, physical, and financial turmoil that it puts through families. You know, getting the insurance is a lot less expensive than sometimes dealing with a lot of the other things later on.
Now, at what age should a person think about this policy?
That's a really good question. Well, I'll just tell you personally, my mother was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer in 2006.
And so could she then get that policy like at the last minute?
No, she could not. Once you're sick, you cannot get it. But she passed away. Well, she was diagnosed at the age of 57 and passed away about 6 months later at the age of 58. I shouldn't say my age, but I'm about 40, and I've had my insurance for a while, just, you know, since I knew that my mother had that
health
issue.
History of your parents. So,
The other big thing is as you age with all kinds of insurance, it gets more expensive the older you get. So I would really traditionally around 50 to 60 would be a good time to think about it. You know, I've had people that have gotten it in their 70s, but it definitely becomes a lot more cost prohibitive.
Right.
I'd like to speak to two issues there. You don't have to do this. I don't want to say this without. Even if you are in your 80s, there is possibilities of getting the insurance. I had that situation with my parents, and they did medically qualify, even with my father with bypass surgery and a history of that. They paid a premium, but they qualified. And a lot of people say, well, yeah, how much was it? Well, I can tell you that if they had taken the policy out, they would have netted above their premium about, in rough dollars, $100,000 to the good. So it is possible. That is a very real possibility. And I encourage all of our listeners, don't take a defeatist attitude. Don't go explore this. Examine what your options are.
Well, even if you could get a little base something just to help out a little bit, it's better than not having anything.
Is there any statistics on the odds a person is going to use this and for how long?
The statistics are, and I don't have, you know, kind of where I get this number from, but it's, I've heard that it's around 50% of Americans, and 40% of those people are under the age of 65, and 60% of those people are over 65. Mainly, you know, usually around 80, 85 is a huge time when most people are using that.
And then for what period of time? Do you know
6 years is about the average.
Fafay is exactly right. A couple between a husband and wife, one of you is going to have a need for this benefit. So if you go out and you buy a...
So that one where you share it as a...
That's exactly right.
That's a good investment for a family, you would think.
That's Sam Grass's endorsement now. You can throw that out with a...
But you don't have a vested interest in that. I mean, you're not in that business. You don't sell insurance.
Well, no, but people are going to obviously say, no, but you do get compensated from individuals that have these policies. And yes, that's true. But the reason I'm pushing this is because I firmly believe that 10, 15 years from now, the conversation that we have in this nation is going to be, how are we going to provide and pay for the cost of our seniors? And it's going to be much worse.
Right. There's going to be more need in 10 years than
Absolutely.
There is now.
Absolutely. It's next financial major crisis is the way I say it. Faye, I greatly appreciate you being here. For our listeners, what one high-level piece of advice could you give them as they start chewing on this idea?
Well, the biggest thing I can say is plan early. People don't plan early enough. A lot of times they're kind of coming in at the last minute and just putting something together. It's important to talk to an attorney to get the will, the living will, the financial power of attorney done. It's important to, you know, look at all your retirement, your life insurance, your long-term care. If you live a long time, if you don't, if you become sick, is really just to look at all the different pieces and make sure that, you know, just have that family discussion and make sure that your things are taken care of and that, you know, if the stuff does hit the fan, you're covered.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And Faye, how could our listeners contact you or your organization if they'd be interested in this?
Oh, that's great. I would really, if people want to learn a little bit more, they can go to my website, www.fayevantrese, which is FAYEVANTREESE.NMFN, Nancy Mark Faye Nancy. Click on insurance products, long-term care, and then your state to find out more state-specific information. Or you can reach me for questions at 404-354-1039.
That's great. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, I certainly hope you you take stock in the show today, from the veterans to the veterans and our elder care, elder law attorney to our long-term care specialist. It all ties in. Very good resources, very good people. Thank you for being our guest.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And that's it for today, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to thank our guest for joining us today. I'd like to thank once again our guests for our listeners for tuning in. And I'd like to remind you that you can listen to today's broadcast at ugeriaradio.com. And in closing, if the youth of our nation are its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors are our greatest national treasure. Thank you and have a great day.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.